Good evening, and if you've tuned in for the worst ever reading of Ulysses, well, I would apologize, but it is the worst ever reading of Ulysses. So part of the worst part of it is that sometimes I don't even bother reading Ulysses. So I think there's very few of you who do listen, and if you do listen, you may not even be tuning in for Ulysses, but hoping that I have something reasonably entertaining to say. So if you don't know me, hi, my name is Connor Charlton. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself, but I'm going to tell you what this thing is. First, this is the Shite Talking Half Hour. This is a throwback to something I recorded just before lockdown. It was called Life in Isolation, and it was about February, March that I released it on SoundCloud. A sort of pseudo podcast, just mostly me talking shit. The Shy Talking Half Hour is going to be roughly half hour, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. And initially, it's going to be talking shit whenever I can. But we are going to revert back to a kind of halfway point between the worst of reading Ulysses and the kind of Macbeth thing that I was doing. And what I will try to do, whether it's through Zoom recorded or when podcast studios are allowed to do their thing, or even figure out a space within my flat, I'll have other artists, potentially local, but probably more in England and America, those that I've worked with in the past, having a chat. Maybe we'll read a scene or two of Macbeth in a kind of slightly comedic way and have some fun. So that's the what out of the way. We've got the other five W's. You say five W's, that's already one out of the five. Well, we're making six W's. So we've got the what, then we're going to talk about the who, then the why, then the where, and then the waffle. And then maybe the how. Maybe the how before the waffle. Okay. So, who am I? Get your bingo cards out. If you are center right, or left right, far right, then fuck you. But maybe you have your typical lefty buzzword adjectives bingo card, and you can start ticking these things off. So, I am a Belfast born, middle class, Northern Irish, more the nationalist side than anything else, more socialist than Bernie Sanders, more capitalist than Trotsky, bisexual, cisgendered actor, slash attempted writer, slash attempted, what's the word? Stand-up comedian. I'm so funny, I can't even remember what that job title is. Co-owner of two very small production companies. So one is the largely London-based Big Nasty Films that we did a lot of cocktail videos. We've got a short black comedy in the editing stage at the minute. I'm just trying to finalize the music and trying to figure out a few flaws and get that through with my good buddy and co-owner of 36 Chambers. So 36 Chambers, we are another small film media company based in Belfast, primarily focused on shooting showreels for actors, doing some short films, having our own micro shorts, actor coaching, and just enjoying ourselves, making some cool stuff while we can, whenever we can, whenever the lockdown restrictions allow it, or certainly we hope whenever they finally leave. So then we've got the when. When are you going to get these? As in when I feel like doing them. You'll just get your little half hour of shite whenever I pop up. Then you've got the how. I'm not quite sure how. I will just try and record them and hopefully it doesn't sound horrific and that I say a sufficient amount of waffle, and we'll get to the waffle in a second, that you're entertained. And that's going into the why. So the why I'm doing this, well, probably like the smell of my own farts a little bit too much, you know, pulling that duvet over my head and letting one rip and just enjoying that succulent chicken Kiev scent just wafting up my own nostrils. I do like talking a bit. I've gotta admit, I'm white, so just like every other white person on the planet right now, I seem to be putting out a podcast. There's a little bit of that self-promotion aspect of being an out-of-work actor slash writer slash director, producer, whatever I happen to do, and trying to get in contact with more people through a different medium and really hopefully ultimately entertain people. I know that this period can be particularly lonely, and you know, I think, you know, we've all had moments that we've been down, and if you have been purely optimistic through this time, hi, please give us some pointers and some tips, be lovely. I've been largely trying to stay out of trouble, but I did move back from London to Belfast and self-isolated back in March, a few days before the official OG lockdown numero uno was called. And for the first while, I drank heavily, and I had a couple of mishaps that said I shouldn't drink so much, and I took a long break and sort of slowly get back on the drink. And I took a while to get back into exercising. Tried a lot of playing guitar, which is new to me. Tried to learn Italian through Duolingo, which kind of felt a little bit pointless because I had nobody to talk Italian to. And by the time I finally did have somebody to talk Italian to, all of the Duolingo knowledge had kind of evaporated from my brain. And I think it's great for learning and building stuff as you're, you know, maybe learning through traditional methods or are based in the place where the language is spoke, but on its own, not so good. But that means I've told you the how, the why, the when, the where. Belfast is where I am. I am currently recording from my old school, original childhood bedroom. The second one I ever had, you know, from 1990 up to about 2005 is when I went to Lancaster to study my undergrad in history. And I've come back and forth. I've lived in Copenhagen, I lived in Barcelona for just under 2 years. I lived in London, as I've repeatedly said, and I feel like kind of right to say that I lived in London because it was 3.5 years, and it's a tough old city to live in. Some fantastic things happen, but it's expensive, and you're grinding, and you're always trying to chase a dream. And in my case, I moved over to 2016 and was doing a master's in acting for screen at the very prestigious Royal Central School of Speech and Drama, the birthplace of acting legends like Jimmy Nesbitt, Dame Judi Dench, Sir Laurence Olivier, and more recently Andrew Garfield and RZA the Jizza Ahmed. Unfortunately, they all got wonderful careers, and I'm still in that struggling stage. But we're always struggling with one thing or another, whether it's a career or life. You know, the times where you have it good and you don't have to worry about anything, they never last too long, do they? Otherwise, you probably wouldn't appreciate them for too long. So onto the waffle. So the waffle, nice juicy part. This is really me just talking about things that have been kind of on my mind recently. So because of lockdown, I've tried to be industrious, tried to teach myself different things, tried not to drink too much, and I that was there's been three kind of pushes on that. One was I decided one night I was gonna have one rum old fashioned at 11 o'clock, and then it became two, And before noon, I think it was 5 rum old fashions. It was maybe 2:30 in the morning on a Thursday morning, Wednesday night. And I finally went to bed. The next day, I woke up and it looked like I'd taken sandpaper from my skin. And I went, why am I doing this? So I took a little break. And the week after, I stayed up drinking Negronis and had about 5 beers and some other things. And the next day was pretty grim. So I took a couple of weeks off. And then there was a little dip whenever it was kind of okay to travel around mid-September. And I went on a camping trip that was a little bit Fear and Loathing-esque in its nature. And I will not go into too much depth about that for reasons of anonymity being destroyed, and what I've been getting up to was not exactly kosher with the 5-0. Anyway, it was the second trip that I had a bit too much whiskey and a little bit too much Guinness one night. I threw up. Next day, I thought I'd be back to normal, wasn't quite there, went to bed reasonably early compared to everyone else. Next day, only had 3 cans of Guinness, was feeling rough and tired and heavy, bloated, it wasn't great. And the next day, I find myself unable to trust a fart. And this was a period in September when my furlough had finally finished and I find myself employed in one of the worst jobs I've done in my life, and it was working for a company called Yellow Tom. I'm not afraid to say it because they're probably boss now. They are a local business listing site, but don't tell them it's a business listing site that gets confused with Yell because of the name. Yellow Tom and Yell sound very similar, but of course they're going, oh no, it's something to do with Yell. It's something like Yell. It's exactly like Yell, except it doesn't have the reach of Yell. It might be cheaper. It might occasionally still produce first page results, but it's very dated and it's had its time. And basically, the owner of the company was banking on all of us making 2 sales a day. And it was a team of 10 that dwindled to 6. And within 3 weeks, I think there was maybe 2 sales for the entire team. And we were promised commission on top of a £10 an hour salary, but we got hit with this Monday morning email saying that I have not got a business plan where I expected no one to be making sales. If you can't make sales, you're not salespeople. Despite the fact that a lot of people coming from fairly successful sales backgrounds, myself, I did work sales about 4 years ago, and I also did it a couple of years ago, different context entirely. But I've never been too bad at sales. Particularly, I think the ability to talk nonsense kind of helps. Maybe a little bit of emotional intelligence, kind of listening to what the person has to say. And being of having an Irish accent kind of helps a lot of people. Unfortunately, for myself, I kept making the mistake of going into sales, because sales is great if you can believe in the product that you're selling. If you believe it works and you believe that it's of benefit to the person you're selling it to, then it's great. But if you have to keep convincing yourself that this product is worthwhile and that they should buy it and that you aren't fleecing them, then it doesn't really matter what you say. You have to be an incredible actor, way better than I think I'm capable of, because you can just sense that hesitancy. And to compare it again to acting, acting requires you not to perform, but to believe that you are the character. I've been coaching a couple of people with acting things, and what I've said to them is that they need to believe that they are the character. And if the character has a very generic name, they have to create a name for them, and they have to create backstory. Why are they doing the job they're doing? What's their family life? And to write an internal monologue. So all of us at any point in time have an internal monologue. You might be saying some things to somebody, but those aren't the only thoughts in your head, the ones that you're turning into words to be sounded off. There's a whole other things go on, and you know, you might have you might be doubting yourself, you might be you know be guilty about something, or you might be hoping that they can take the message without you having to be blunt about something. You know, there's a whole rake of things. I mean, that's assuming that you're a nice person, that you're conscientious. You know, we all know duplicitous people, that they are saying some things, but really they want another. That's not to say that they are always necessarily evil. It's just that there is more than one way to skin a fish. I don't tend to do this myself. I tend to feel a bit too guilty about that. But I also have always said, if you have to tell somebody that you're honest, then that's either something guilty within you, or you are trying to create a persona of somebody that's honest. Honest people don't have to remind you that they're honest. That's one of my tips in life. So one of the things I really want to talk about was story writing. I'm not a massive fan on self-help books, but recently I've been reading a lot of screenwriting, story writing, and script writing books. And I think these are obviously self-help for somebody that wants to write better stories, more cohesive stories. Maybe they want to get published, or maybe if they want to produce some outstanding films or stories. But in a way, they kind of find root in life itself. And a lot of them are sampling anthropology. There was a writer, anthropologist, called Joseph Campbell, who wrote a book called Hero of a Thousand Faces. And I haven't read it, but from what I gather, it largely tackles the fact that every culture has folk stories where they may be about a young man who's maybe naive or haughty or angry or immature, who has to go on some form of journey to procure something which either gives him strength in order to defeat an enemy, or a potion in order to save somebody's life. This is a very common trope, and you see it all the time, and it influenced the Japanese writer-director Kurosawa, who wrote films like Seven Samurai, which was what The Magnificent Seven was based on, Yojimbo, which was basically shot for shot remade in the film A Fistful of Dollars, and A Hidden Fortress, which was the basis for Star Wars. Now, within that one, that is a kind of what they call the monomyth, a quintessential monomyth. And you see Jungian archetypes, and you'll hear about Carl Jung in various lectures. I mean, he is the basis of so much of psychology. Unfortunately, charlatans like Jordan Peterson will latch onto his work and kind of use that as a sort of twist. He twists on the ideas in order to sort of preach his constant conservatism. But But there's a, I think there's a lot in those archetypes that exist in our day-to-day life. So of course we've got the hero, and almost everybody sees himself in some way or another as the hero. You know, good villains in any film are written to believe that what they're doing has benefit, maybe for their family or for society, and it's what they deserve. But we also see the comedy relief, the kind of drunk duo who, you know, C-3PO and R2-D2 play. There's the mentor figures, so the Obi-Wan Kenobi. There's the trickster, or the sort of one who deceives, and that's, you know, you're typically your villains, but sometimes you're sort of your middlemen. Maybe your rogue figures, like Han Solo, and of course the love interest, that the princess, and that's Princess Leia in the first one. So I think that these figures do appear in our day-to-day life, and sometimes we actually see facets of our own personalities be these different characters. There's definitely a part where we deceive ourselves, and I think the imposter syndrome that so many of us seem to have is a little voice within us saying we're not good enough. They'll find out. This is the one that's tricking you, you know. And we need to find that inner mentor who can lead us to doing things that we care about and we really want to achieve and do. And I may be saying this from the benefit of being from the first world, being middle class, being single in my 30s. I don't have to worry about too much else other than my health, my career, my mother, who's my closest family member, my friends, who I will try to be there as best I can. I don't have to worry about where my next meal is coming from, or what happens if I get sick. You know, if I get sick, I get sick, or you know, at least I have a health service, which at the minute is, of course, massively stretched. And don't ever vote Tory if you live in England. But I don't, you know, it's not even the United States, where if I get sick, my entire family has to sell everything they own, and we all have to band together and you know, collect recycling bottles, or crowdfund my insulin, or whatever horrible stuff that they have to go through, even in the States. Never mind the second or third world countries, where you have to sell a kidney to fix your liver. I don't know. Robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's just, you know, we are very, very lucky in that sense. But I have little thoughts and sadness, and you know, part of my life is that I've always said I want to tell stories, and that's part of the reason why I'm an actor. But I've always gone, I'm going to write this down and write this down and write this down. This is important. Sometimes it's quite difficult to portray something we've seen or experienced or thought in words or actions or deeds. You know, that is one of the many simple facts of life. We're not always as articulate as we'd like to be. We're not always as cohesive or comprehensive as we'd like to be. But another thought I've had recently, which kind of bothers me, is that what if all the good stories I've ever lived through have already happened? Which sounds pretty dark. It probably sounds pretty, you know, bleak to me. There's a critic who once wrote that in the past, tragedy was about the loss of life, and in today, it's about the loss of purpose. You know, what happens if we lose that sense of purpose? And you see, know, thousands of people killed themselves when they can no longer fulfill the role of father or earner, or they, you know, train to do one job and they feel lost whenever a circumstance, maybe the corona pandemic or economic depression, doesn't allow them to do that. But we, in our 30s, typically settle down a bit. We drink a little bit less, we go out less, we worry more about our health. Certainly I would have been cycling and doing some delivery work if I was in my 20s, but now the icy roads, I know that unless I land on that big fleshy part of my arse, something is gonna make an unpleasant cracking sound if I hit the ground. But and of course, you know people, if they have kids or whatever, they're gonna be more concerned about protecting themselves for the future, to see these kids grow up. So then what you're left with, your story is about going to the supermarket, and you have to write your stories in a way that communicate with your people of your own age or older audiences, because you're too old for the youth to get a kick out of your experiences. That old bit in The Simpsons is like, I used to be with it, and I thought I'd always be with it until I had to work, and then I had to do this, and then I could only be with it part of the time, and what with it becomes scary. I mean, I'm all on the internet all the time, but I look at TikTok and I kind of despair and think that we are destroying our attention spans even further with this kind of quick fire content. There's something kind of sinister about the way social media influencers operate. I've had reality TV stars for 20 years, and that cult of personality, 15 minutes of fame, celebrity, but now they're doing it in a way that seems to be tapping into our short attention spans and making things even worse. We used to have what I call the Save the Cat effect. Save the Cat was written by Blake Snyder. It's a screenwriting book, and it suggests that in order for the audience to warm to a story, they have to understand or appreciate the main character within the first 10 minutes. Either they have to do something gracious, like saving a cat from certain death, or being at a point of vulnerability, or experience life like an everyday man until something bad happens, and then we can put ourselves in their shoes to follow them. And if you look at films from the 90s onwards, they all kind of follow that. Previous to that, used to have a lot more world building. Going back to the Star Wars example, it's 17 minutes into that film before you finally meet Luke Skywalker. And there was a lot of farting about in the desert with droids, which, it doesn't work that well. Or we may be regarded a little bit more harshly by modern standards. Other example would be the original Blade Runner. I like that, slow burn neon noir, but I know people that have watched that more recently and they thought it's Kafka-esque. It takes forever to get anywhere, and that anywhere isn't a big enough payoff for what it is. But that's maybe a small portion of it. Then you look at TikTok, and you look at the way modern stand-ups are often told to operate, where they need to have 4 punchlines within a minute. That's 1 every 15 seconds. They've got to be funny every goddamn minute, whereas before, we could take our time, let things stew, slowly put those details into the pot and stir it, and we'd get there. And we'd have something that would make us properly belly laugh for 5 minutes. Or so we hope. Anyway, so to go back, there's that fear of losing all the stories, that I have to create my own stories, and that's where the script writing books become self-help to me. Who knows if and when this lockdown ends, if I'll get to go gallivanting and get a little bit pissed somewhere and get up to nonsense. Even despite the fact that my stomach and my body has been telling me I need to slow down with the silliness. Hence why I largely retired from bartending about March 2020. I loved bartending for years, but I was coming to the end where I knew I never really wanted to be a proper manager. Or if I did, I wanted to do it purely for the prestige of saying, well, I've done this thing off and on for 10 years. It's about time I stepped up. And I never entered cocktail competitions. I was always trying to balance other things at the same time. And I still, maybe I'm spinning too many plates, applying for other jobs that I hope I can do alongside the writing and the potential acting. And maybe the podcasting. And maybe the blogging. And we'll see. So if you listen the whole way through, thank you for listening. And I hope you'll join me again sometime in the future. And if you need any conversation, just let me know and we'll have a chat then. And hopefully I will get to doing the worst ever reading of Ulysses again soon, or the worst ever rendition of Macbeth, and getting to speak to some incredible people out there. So thank you. Thank you for listening. Good night.